Truth.
Well, I was born too late to be a rolling stone. I don't know Jerry Lee. I never met Johnny Noble standing with a stride. I'm rocking most bastard son. Go out, get drunk, get wild, have fun. I don't got $1 million. Don't drive a Cadillac. Give me every chance, cause I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead yet. Oh no, I'm not dead yet.
Is H-E double hockey sticks the case? Not dead yet. Not myself, not Ron Avery, not what we call the freedom movement, not the United States of America as it was founded as a republic. Not dead yet. The mass media cartel, not dead yet, but dying a slow, agonizing death as only it uniquely deserves. Listen, you can hear it dying. Listen. Listen closely. Just that slight hint, if you put your ear to the wall, the stethoscope to the wall, the agonizing, slow dying pain of the mass media cartel. Wishful thinking in part, maybe so. But it won't be for lack of trying that media apparatus will be someday, and I'd love to be living to see it, decommissioned. Yes, you heard me correct. Decommissioned. Let that word sink in. Decommissioned. Anyway, for those of you who might be tuning in for the first time, or maybe you haven't heard me live for a while because I've been on a bit of a hiatus. Of course, this is Mark Anderson, host of Stop the Presses, May 3rd, 2023, just after 2 p.m. Central U.S. time. I'm joined by Ron Avery, who manages to video simulcast this show most of the time. And usually he's tuning in what does this button do? What does that button do? But I think he's ready to say at least hello. Good afternoon, Ron.
Yes, I'm doing good. How are you doing? I've been playing with some sound effects, but go ahead.
Yeah, fun to play with things. As I say, what does this button do? And yeah. Anyway... That seems to be the political science we're practicing these days. Nothing orderly, nothing principled, nothing tried and true. Just, what does this button do? And maybe that button is labeled full-blown democracy, or it's labeled debt-based currency. And let's just give it another whirl.
Sure.
And expect different results. Anyway, you might be interested to know, Ron, before we do sort of a slight revisiting of the ironic thing we brought up yesterday on your show, The Search for Lawful Government here in RBN, about the odd, ironic service provided by some of the so-called mass shooters in providing what is sometimes, most of the time, the only video footage we get from these reported events. Besides revisiting that, because you know we can't resist, I also spent yesterday early evening covering a conference virtually online of Richard Haass, the now 20-year president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He spoke to their brethren at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, which is the former Chicago Council on Foreign Relations. They changed their name some 15, 20 years ago. Both organizations are about a century old. So they're breaking bread together. They're commingling, cross-pollinating. And Richard Haass, who's about ready to step down as president of the Council on Foreign Relations, and that's a position that David Rockefeller held between 1970 and 1985, president of the CFR. So that tells you how significant that position on that private entity is.
But did you call that the Brethren? Did they call that the Brethren?
They don't use that word.
Sounded kind of like a cult.
I use that word. It could be taken to imply cult, but certainly people that are of the same feather flocking together.
Yeah.
At the very least. Anyway, Richard Haass, H-A-A-S-S, get that. Two vowels the same, H-A-A-S-S. He spoke to the CCGA, Chicago Council, on his book. And let's talk about that a little bit. And I'm sure we'll drift back to the shooting gallery, ironic kind of humorous story or commentary in a little bit. But I'm going to do a little share of the screen here. We are video simulcasting livestream.com/RyanAvery/stop the presses. And here is the book that Richard Haass was in Chicago to promote while he spoke about similar topics. And Ron, I'd like you to read the title of the book.
Okay. That's called The Bill of Obligations. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
The Bill of Obligations, The 10 Habits of Good Citizens by Richard Haass. Now, that Richard Haass is no dummy. He does have a number of well-reasoned insights and arguments in this book. It's not that the people that occupy these positions of power are stupid. They're not idiots. They can make a good argument at times, and he does have several in here. However, the flaws are always quite fundamental. One is that although he mentioned the U.S. being founded as a republic, the 13 colonies and all that, and he's pretty well versed in the early republic's history and the major figures and major events of that history, definitely well versed in all of that. But what he talked about, Ron, was an immediate drift into using the word democracy and then leaving the word republic behind. So there's one, I'll just call it oversight for now. Just
Mark,
somewhat polite.
What are those two names up at the top of this thing? From Renewing America and Diamondstein and Spivogel?
I believe those are the publishing entities, and evidently this is part of the project on the future of democracy.
Oh, boy.
Now, I'm going to say that tentatively, but this is the Council on Foreign Relations' own website. This is right from the source. It's not from Amazon. It's not from Google. It's not from any publisher. This is right from the CFR, for which Mr. Haass is president still after about 20 years in that position. Now, so the Bill of Obligations. Now, he points out that obligations aren't mandates, but he defines them, Ron, as things that American citizens ought to do to make their country better. They ought not to be divided. They ought to be looking for common ground. They ought to be better informed about civics. Now, I don't generally disagree with that, but here's the thing. Not only the we're really a democracy and the republic thing was only the root of this thing and we're not really going there anymore. Not only that, but like most, if not all, of these think tanks' presentations and books and studies and recommendations, you name it, it is absolutely swept clean of any mention of the spiritual aspects of life. It is purely, and I mean purely, a political slash materialistic view of the world. And I think that that is probably the ultimate flaw of this. There's no nod or acknowledgement toward providence. Divine providence, that God has anything to do with human affairs. It's an assumption that man is his own arbiter, his own boss. He is the ultimate authority. There's nothing above man. And that and this embrace of democracy, leaving the republic concept purely in the pages of history, I think, Ron, are what basically hurt or harm what would otherwise, I have to admit, would be a fairly good book, except for one other thing, and that is it seems to assume, and I'm not saying citizens, everyday citizens, don't have some effect or don't have some part in making their country better. They do. But this seems to put the onus on the people and not the government. In other words, the people have obligations, but correct me if I'm wrong, Ron, but so do governments. In fact, governments have duties. not just mere obligations, or you might say an obligation to carry out their duties. Is this not maybe a way of kind of inverting that, inverting the reality that governments have duties and people have rights, and that's how it should function? Everybody stays in their lane. Is this maybe an attempt to shift more of the burden to the people and off of government? I'm merely asking the question. It might even be an unfair question. I haven't read this whole book, but I have read some significant sections of it, and I covered Mr. Haas's speech to the Chicago Council yesterday. But so that's my three things, Ron: the absence of godly things, especially Christianity, the pushing of the U.S. as a democracy, and then this idea that the people, yes, they have rights, as Mr. Haas told the Chicago Council, but they really need to get in tune with their obligations and not be so fixated on just rights alone. And I know you're well versed in these things in political science, Ron. You're sufficiently well versed where you can comment on this, even though you didn't see the same speech I saw and you didn't read the same passages that I read. But based on what I've said, what is your impression? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's kind of pretty obvious, too, by the title of the book, The Bill of Obligations, The 10 Habits of Good Citizens. What this is doing is putting the burden of maintaining lawful government on the people, and then also carrying that forward to say bad government is the result of poor, sloppy citizens that allow bad government or dissolve government. And, you know, I actually used to think that too myself. I used to think, you know, if the people weren't so lazy and slovenly and careless, we wouldn't be in this mess. But the truth is, the people that have more at stake, actually, to lose from allowing their government to dissolve and to alter its provisions without approval of the people through amendments, which is dissolution. You can't blame the people for that, because they can't control all the time what, and they don't have authority. See, they're giving obligations to those who don't have authority. I'm not the president. I'm not even a representative. So how can I have an obligation when I have no authority? So, see, I've delegated my authority to my representatives to exercise my authority that I have. So how is it now that he's turning this around and saying that I have duties, and that's what an obligation is a duty, as you said, but I delegated my authority to my government officials to carry out the duty of protecting my property, my life, my liberty, and my possessions. So how is it now that these obligations have returned to me after I've delegated them off to them? So I think he's trying to say that, trying to make the case that our crummy, dissolved, tyrannical government is the fault of people, citizens with bad habits.
Yeah, that's fairly close, Ron. And the reason I asked you that question was to float the question and have you answer it and see how close you are to the truth without you having heard him speak or read any passages of this book. And I got to say, if you were shooting a bow and arrow at a target and you were going for the bullseye, you're only about a half inch off the bullseye.
Well, that's good. That's a killing spot, by the way. If you're only a half inch from the bullseye, that's death.
if that. Now, one thing about these double domes at these think tanks like Richard Haas of the CFR is that, intelligent though they may be, they're kind of simplistic and they're utterly predictable. Because the framework in which they operate, which is really to seek a world state under many guises, under many hats, under many banners, in seeking that world state, they can only cloak what they're doing so much. And then as you know what to look for, as you know what to listen for, as you understand their lingo, no matter what they say, no matter how they say it, you pretty much know what they're getting at. They become quite transparent even when they're trying to be opaque. You can see right through them, in other words. And so, yeah, this is an interesting item. I'm not going to beat it to death. I will say this. He'll say, he said things like, well, some people believe, you know, they have the right to keep and bear arms and they don't want any limitations on guns and ammo. Others talk about their right to be safe from violence. And he equated those two things with the same weight. In other words, they both had equal validity.
Well, I happen to believe that you do have a right to protect your life, liberty, and possessions. Now, their right to be protected, yes. What they've this again is you've delegated your authority to police and that kind of thing to protect you, but the problem is that's when you are not under immediate threat. The problem is when immediate threat comes and you have no opportunity to turn to government for the protection of your property, you are left at your own disposal of how to do that.
Right.
And if you're unarmed and you've been disarmed, then you cannot protect your life, your liberty, or your possessions because you can't get access to the government. This is well discussed in John Locke's Second Treatise of Government. This is that only what he's talking about only applies in the light of day when you make a police complaint and that kind of thing. But when somebody attacks you at night, you can't call the police. You can call them, but they won't get there in time. That kind of thing. So, okay. And not only that, it doesn't. What he's talking about does not address being attacked by your own government when the government becomes totally tyrannical and has all the war machinery. And you're sitting there with a BB gun and a water gun. This does not reflect the Second Amendment and your God-given right to be to defend yourself from tyranny.
What you just said that gets into the next part of that. Your God-given right. See, so he takes a God-given right where the Second Amendment gives the U.S. citizen that extra measure of protection. Not only is your government armed, but you have the right to be armed. It's a universally recognized right. So you have something separate from the government with which to protect yourself. And that is among the God-given rights. See, in the language of globalese put out by the Richard Haasses of the world, there is no such thing as something God-given because there's no such thing as God. You see?
Right.
And this is that other flaw I talked about, the democracy thing, the absence of God. And so therefore, you take God and you take God-given rights away, and then it's natural that you would say, well, some citizens believe they have the right to bear arms and others don't like guns and they want public safety. And then to give them equal weight. You see how that can happen if it's in a certain milieu.
Then it becomes a matter of true democracy, what you're saying. So whoever has 51% of the vote, the ones that say, I have a right to be protected from people with arms, and those that say, I have a right to keep and bear arms, well, whoever the winner is, that's democracy. Okay, well, that doesn't work because you have a God-given right. Who's going to protect you from unlawful government? Who's going to do that?
We're coming up on the first break, but you see how that brings it to the level of a vote. And then it's just a majority vote, and the Second Amendment's gone.
That's right. And that's not right. It's immutable. That's a God-given right to defend yourself from tyranny.
Right. The immutability of certain rights is where this falls short, which is into the democracy thing, the absence of God thing, and the other factors I mentioned that exposed this book, even though it's well written and intelligent in some ways, exposed the fundamental flaws that really kind of render it as a kind of subversive thing in a softball kind of sense. We'll be right back with more. I believe we have a caller. Stay tuned.
Which will conclusively prove George Soros' role in orchestrating the plandemic. But first, dear patriots, the truth train has brought us a conspiracy in our own backyard. Now, you may think you know the story.
Now, it's like I always say, there's a whole lot of bullshit out there. So I'd like to give Soros, Pelosi, the Zionists, the Mexican, the snowflakes, and Oklahoma.
Stay strong, truth tellers. Stay strong.
Let's put my arms around you, and we'll rock till the break of dawn. This feels like heaven, just you and me. This feels like heaven.
You're listening to RBN, In Defense of the Republic.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Hello, welcome back to Stop the Presses, the 3rd of May, 2023. And I noticed we have a caller, David from Massachusetts. Let's slip you in right now so you're not holding too long. You out there, David?
Yeah, I'm here, Mark. How are you?
Hey, not bad. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Ron.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Well, there's a lot on my mind, Mark. You know, when I was listening to you talking about the mass media cartel and maybe, the day is soon coming that they may be decommissioned, and, of course, you're hoping for the day that the mass media cartel will be decommissioned, and the sooner the better and all that. So I'm kind of paraphrasing. I'm not going to quote you word for word. But basically, you know, that's kind of you were talking along that vein when you first opened up your show. Your opening comments and everything. But listen, I've been banned by Steve Elkins, and Sam doesn't put my call through on the weekends. I like to call Chris Switzer, and Sam won't put my call through. And I almost didn't get through to you. Julie almost you know, made me kind of promise about what I'd talk about or something, that I wouldn't talk about anti-Semitism and that sort of thing, you know. But, Mark, I'll tell you what my concern is. In a word to the wise is sufficient. I go back to John Stadtmiller in the Army. We were in the Army the same years, 72 and 73. We're both Vietnam veterans, and neither one of us ever set foot in Vietnam, but we were in during the war years. We were both stationed at Fort Knox, Kentucky. I've been a friend of Republic Broadcasting for years, almost since its inception. I donated a lot of money, and I used to distribute hundreds of business cards out of my taxi cab, just like I did the Spotlight in American Free Press. I used to give away bumper stickers and everything else out of my cab, supporting RBN. And many times when they were in a financial crunch and everything, I'd send them off $100. So I've been very good to the public broadcasting, you know. And as far as Steve Elkins goes, I've been very good to Steve Elkins. You know, when I was personal friends with Ralph Winterroad for years up in Alaska, we worked together to found the Alaskan Independence Party and everything. And when Ralph was sick up there in the Valley Hospital that I'd been to many times when I drove cab up there out in the valley, in the Matanuska Valley up in Alaska and everything, I was kind enough to hook Steve up with Ralph's secretary, Nina. And you know, I asked Nina's permission if it would be okay if I'd give her a number to Steve Elkins and so on. Yeah, to make a long story. So listen, so he banned me. And then, of course, Sam's not taking my calls. But you'll never guess why Steve Elkins banned me, Mark. You want to know why?
I guess I'm not sure where you're going with this. There's only limited time. I want you to get a question in or a comment, but go on.
I'll tell you my overall thrust of this call. But, yeah, I exposed there's nothing more important than the United States delegates to Davos, Switzerland, and Klaus Schwab's Great Reset, the World Economic Forum. And we were sending John Kerry, and I revealed that John Kerry, that wasn't his real name, because I'm very familiar with Kerry, because he was a senator from Massachusetts, and he, too, was a Vietnam veteran that tried to palm himself off as a Swift Boat hero when he was running for president. And John O'Neill wrote a book. John O'Neill wrote a book along with... anyways, the other author there that begins with a P. Anyways, I revealed that his real name was Harry Kahn, and I talked about the Irish breakfast up here on St. Patrick's Day breakfast, where it was sickening how John Kerry always tried to palm himself off as a Boston Irishman, and everything, Steve took issue with that. Said, "No, his name's John Forbes Kerry," and he wanted me to prove over the phone. Of course, you can't prove anything over the phone, but I attempted to. I attempted to prove, and he said, "Where did you find this?" And I found out. I first found out about John Kerry from Professor Anthony Sutton, and then I mentioned, you know, that Anthony Sutton was an expert on the Order of the Skull and Crossbones. And Steve started pulling.
We're coming up on the break soon. This is a lot of notable history and different relations you've had and
Let me get to the main point. I've been around for a long time. I saw the Southern Poverty Law Center file a civil lawsuit against Tom Metzger and the White Aryan Resistance in California with Marvin Dees and everything. And he had to forfeit all his all his assets in a civil lawsuit. They left Tom Metzger penniless. Reverend Richard Butler up in the Aryan Nations up in northern Idaho, the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a civil lawsuit against them, and they took even their personal assets. But the Aryan Nations or the Church of Jesus Christ Christian.
David. I don't mean to cut you short, but live radio has to be obeyed. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after station ID and these messages.
smile, such platonic eye. How they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And welcome to the next half of Stop the Presses, the 3rd of May, 2023, host Mark Anderson. We're back to video simulcasting, livestream.com/Ron Avery, A-V-E-R-Y, /Stop the Presses. I've been on a bit of a hiatus, family and other professional demands lately. And so this is the first time I've been live in, I believe, 3 weeks without looking it up. Ron's been pretty consistent with his Search for Lawful Government show at the same time, 2 p.m. Central, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We're going to move on to the next caller, Mike from Kentucky. No one is individually banned from this show, but we do need to stick on point and ask questions or make comments that can be addressed.
Hey,
so,
can you hear me?
Mike from Kentucky, are you with us?
I hope so. I heard the big burst of static. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Ah, I'm on the wrong side of the state for me. It's too flat over here. I'm looking across the way at the towers at Churchill Downs. It's big May Day today, but I don't care about any of that. I'm not staying for the Derby. But to kind of go back to the topic that I called in on, Kentucky has a mystery of the missing constitutions. And it's in the Citizen's Guide, if you can find a copy of it. But I kind of became friends with a paralegal who had me in the 90s, pre-internet, looking around for some stuff that he couldn't find on microfilm that had disappeared from the libraries, different libraries that he frequented. And Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, helped to write the first two constitutions for Kentucky, or of Kentucky, whatever it is, you know. And I recently reminded him that in 1850, one of the constitutions they can't find, by the way, they have a typewritten copy of it, no signatures, they changed Kentucky to operate from all process and mandates under State of Kentucky to Commonwealth of Kentucky in 1850. If you go back and look at Section 10, which I believe is one of the sections that Thomas Jefferson helped to write, there is no such thing as the wisdom of the crowd or majority rules when it comes to certain provisions that are considered truth, like the idea that you have the right to defend yourself, your life, the right that you have to worship God according to the dictates of your conscience. And those sections, they are forever outside the scope of the duped masses or the government to alter. That is, you know, there no wisdom of the crowd, no democracy can change that legitimately. Otherwise, it's basically constructive fraud. Well, they tried to change in 1850 to defect the right to concealed carry or carry a weapon, a concealed weapon in defense of yourself. They tried to change that in 1850. And in 1891, I believe, the fourth constitution. Then in 1947, they tried to get another constitution for Kentucky, which, of course, during that time period, it was there was a lot of crazy stuff going on with all these bureaucracies exploding. And that was soundly rejected. But I just wondered if you'd run across that in any state constitutions and how you can actually exert your state citizenship or the land of my birth is Kentucky. You know, I consider myself a man upon the soil. How do we get the dang courts to recognize that stuff? They just ignore it.
Boy, that's not an easy thing to tackle right here, right now.
I know. It's kind of important.
I understand the insight that provides, and it's interesting what you shared, which ties into our earlier discussion on Richard Haass addressing the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And as I mentioned, democracy is the preferred route. The republic was only how we were founded. Therefore, everything seems to land in a majority rule, as you say, wisdom of the mass, wisdom of a crowd, wisdom of the hoi polloi. And that today, with an audience that's largely educated by our public school system and the mass media cartel, you're going to tell me that these people are going to have intelligent obligations and embrace their country and help their country in a positive way. Now, Richard Haass did say, to be fair, that people need to be much better educated in civics as his first of 10 good habits to be good citizens. That's true. People do need to be more educated in civics, but his civics is absent the political science that you and I and Ron are talking about. His civics is a flawed civics. There are no God-given rights in the civics that he would teach the people. If they don't think they have God-given rights, then it becomes merely a roll of the dice, the wisdom of the crowd. Do we have the right to bear arms? Let's roll the dice on the craps table, right?
Majority rule.
But to answer your question, I might throw it over to Ron. Ron's pretty well in political science. If I've got a associate's degree, he has at least a bachelor's.
Well,
what do you think, Ron?
Well, just throw me the tough questions, Mark. Don't give me the easy, fun stuff. Well, I'd say right off that it popped in my mind as soon as you said that. That, you know, how do you get, and the question, let me restate your question a little bit the way I would state it. How do we get the courts of a dissolved, unlawful, tyrannical government to understand that we're a man on the soil?
Exactly.
It ain't going to happen, is what I'm telling you. That's the solution to that is it ain't happening.
Well, some of the techniques I've heard is to try to approach these guys that are in this de facto office in their personal private capacity and go after them personally and threaten to charge them with piracy, things like that. Some people...
Well, now, let me just caution you right before you go any more with that, because I have a good friend, a very good friend, close friend, who almost did 10 years in prison for trying to do something with a judge. They have new laws out now called paper terrorism. And she was accused of paper terrorism. And she just barely got off. She did get 10 years of 10 years of probation. She's probably just now getting. Almost did 10 years in jail with it.
For my money, though, given the way that they're tracking and tracing us, and I just saw a video from William Benning from a year ago where he just rattles off all of the ways that they have totally trashed the legal system. You know, no Fourth Amendment, forget, you know, big deal. I think the title of it is something like, Do We Still Have a First Amendment? Because everything that I've just said to you on this phone and everybody that's associated with this phone and your guys' phones and everything we've said now goes in our XT score file to be used against us. So we don't really have freedom of speech anymore because of that. So, you know, if they were to put a voluntary ankle bracelet on you and mock you for 10 years, they're already doing it. And the worst thing about it is people just aren't aware of it. They forget about it. So,
you know, you both make some great points. It's a tough call. You would think, and it really ought to be that way, where you could hold a judge or a congressman personally accountable for a dereliction of duty. On paper, in principle, it sounds perfectly logical, and it ought to be doable. There may be even a way to do it. But what Ron mentioned is, of course, how they put up their defenses. They know they've abdicated their duties as government officials. They've abandoned much, if not all, of the constitutional order. So now congressmen and judges and all sorts of people in the power structure have these measures where a citizen can be accused, like Ron says, of terrorism, even though terrorism more often in the strict sense is the use of violence, actual violence, for political ends. But Americans have been schooled by the media cartel to believe that terrorism is just doing something violent.
I'd like to add one thing to this, is that it's been a long-standing thing now in the court system that judges are immune. They're immune, and the whole idea is if you don't like the way they ruled, appeal it. So this is what everybody is up against. If you have a problem with the judge, the only solution is to appeal his decision. And so then you just go to a bank of judges and then ultimately to the Supreme Court of your state. But you're not going to do anything to these judges. I'm just telling you that, you know, that's not going to happen.
Let me add something real quick before we let you go and do some final comments. One thing that I've heard about, and I've seen this carried out by think tanks who have done some decent studies, it ought to be true. You ought not to have to be a lawyer to be a judge. If you didn't have to be a lawyer to be a judge, you wouldn't be a member of the American Bar. And if you weren't a member of the American Bar, you wouldn't have to have undying allegiance and fealty to the Bar Association. And technically, you shouldn't have to be a police officer, believe it or not, to be a sheriff. We've been led to believe that all judges must be attorneys and must be trained by the same brethren within that construct. And that would help if we could get some structural changes, then the results would be a little different. But as long as we don't get those structural changes, the results will probably be the same. Do you have any final comments? We do need to keep an eye on the time.
I did want to say Julie is one of the most pleasant voices or people that I deal with on any kind of regular basis on RBN. I don't know what that problem is with that last caller, but I mean, Mike Rivero, as far as I know, is always screened callers wanting to know what their topic is going to be and that kind of stuff. So I don't see a problem with that. I've worked in the media. If that's a show host wants to do that to try to keep the show on topic, that's their prerogative. I mean, they put a lot of work into production of a show and thinking it out, and the callers that just call in and ramble off on all different topics, it just destroys the flow of the show. But
right. Well said.
For the record, I don't screen what they're going to talk about unless Julie does just the most fundamental basic things that RBN needs as a station, and that's their prerogative. I don't scream in the interest of absolute free speech, but yes, you're right. But do you have any final thoughts on what we're talking about? I'm just being a referee.
Yeah, and I understand that too, but there are some, over the years, there's been some real problem callers, I think, that are border on disrupting. And I mean, I appreciate that guy's history. I've had a long history. I did a documentary on Blinded by the Lies with the help of Rick Tyler, or Tagahoffer, whatever his name was, the voice of Liberty, came to my little TV studio, and we did a half, I think it was maybe 45 minutes with Jim Floyd. So I know all about Southern Poverty Law Center and how much a sleaze bag more sleaze was, but I don't understand what the topic, how that had anything to do with our topic, you know. The philosophy of government and the truth that cannot be changed is what I thought we were going towards with these unalienable rights. So I understand that the guy wanted to bring up. But anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, keep listening. Even when you hang up, we want to revisit what we talked about yesterday on his show. Let's move that over, Ron, to what we were talking about yesterday and put a cherry on top. The American people at large, as a collective thing, are basically being put on trial through the specter of what we are told are mass shootings in schools and churches. And then the idea that our Second Amendment can be jettisoned or surrendered due to these mass shootings because of the other half of the issue that Richard Haass talked about. Yes, people believe in the unfettered right to bear arms, but then there's people that don't want guns around that believe they have the unfettered right simply to be safe. And you know, give them equal weight and let majority rule through democracy decide the thing. So, okay, so then there's these reported mass shootings, and the people collectively are looking at the Second Amendment hanging by a thinner and thinner and thinner thread. And the mass shootings are said to justify the idea that we simply need fewer guns around, and Americans, the average American especially, cannot be trusted to own a gun of any magnitude. And yet, even though we're the ones on the receiving end, the American people who are being kind of indicted because they want to hang on to their Second Amendment, and that's beginning to cause tremendous harm. How does that sound familiar? There's those unvaccinated people, and they're really the problem. They're causing tremendous harm because they're standing in the way of full vaccination. Well, now we're standing in the way of disarmament, so we're being indicted. The reason we're being indicted, or the impetus or the leverage, is the mass shootings, but we're not, as we talked about yesterday, we're not being shown the evidence. There are no clear, concise, detailed reports of any of these mass shootings. We only have pronouncements at press conferences. So the evidence by which we're supposed to be disarmed, the reason, the rationale, is not detailed and spelled out for us. The details of these so-called shootings are withheld from us. And so we're supposed to give up a God-given right based on no evidence. And the burden of proof of the mass shootings is on the people that investigate it, or say they do, the police, the school where it happened, whatever. It's the burden of proof is not on the average person that may believe or disbelieve the scenario. The burden of proof is on the governing bodies who are saying, here's a mass shooting. Now, here's the reason we need to get your guns, slowly but surely. We're going to indict you. We're going to strip you of a fundamental right, but we're not going to show you the evidence in detail as to how we can justify that. This is what they're facing. And we had that little humorous little offshoot of that, that the irony is that if we get any on-the-scene video footage of any magnitude, and we're being a little facetious to be sure, if you get any video footage, if it comes from anywhere, it's probably going to come from the shooters themselves and their body cams, which is kind of ironically, humorously, strangely true. And so revisiting yesterday, Ron, and we can finish the show with this, and it almost stems from what we talked about with Richard Haass in a way. You can kind of see how they intersect. And I won't try and dig too deep of a hole, but what are your reflections on that?
Well, before we wrap it up, I think we ought to take Jay from Arkansas. He's been waiting for a while here, and see what he's got to say, and then we can wrap it up.
Yeah, I was reading a document. Sorry about it. As I was talking, I was reading. I did not catch that.
Yeah,
Jay from Arkansas. Let me see. What do we got? We got about 9, maybe 8 minutes. What you got, Jay?
I want to ask you guys a legitimate question, and will you allow me a rebuttal to your answer?
Sure.
Why do you need a gun?
Well, my answer would be to give you sufficient force to resist tyranny or criminal acts beyond what you could do without one. And
okay. Hey, I always get the same three things. I always get the same three answers every time I ask somebody that. It's always about tyranny. Well, what happened in New Orleans in 2005? What happened in Waco? What happened in Ruby Ridge? What about the tyranny when they were throwing grandmas in jail for going to church? How much more tyranny do you need? Number two, you say self-defense. 98% of the chance that you do defend yourself, it's going to be against a non-white person. You're going to prison for a hate crime. Okay, number three, I always get what you're probably going to say, is to protect our shores from an invasion. We got 60 million invaders in this country right now. What have they done with the guns? What good are they if you're not going to do something with them? So that's my question.
Well, that's well said. Let me take that real quick, Mark, because I've been thinking that for years and years. We talk about guns, but the main point that we don't talk about is organized use of guns in defense of the community and in defense of individuals. And see, that's where the militia came in early America. That's what a militia was for. If you had trouble in a community, if individuals had trouble, they could call the local militia and they would come over and do something about it. And this is what we are, people want, they're hanging on to the guns, but they're not hanging on to militia. That's the second part of the Second Amendment. Our right to not only have them, but to use them in groups, organized groups.
Well, there's been many people that have tried to do that on the border over the decades, and every time they get together to protect their own personal property, the feds swoop in and find some kind of bogus charge to throw them in prison on. I've seen it for years and years and years. They always do that. Every time someone gets together, look at the Michigan militia. They completely destroyed it after Oklahoma City bombing with infiltrators and spies. Every time you get together, the feds is always there to get intertwined and set you up for something.
Yeah, they infiltrate these militias. Some of these militias probably were not even legitimate from the get-go. You know, you make a great point, and Ron, you gave a pretty good answer. What I was talking about was the basic principle of why you own a gun. But yes, to actually effectively wield them in a lawful, effective manner for a specific purpose, probably the last time that was done substantively was the Battle of Athens in Tennessee in 1946. The citizens, including some World War II veterans, saw that there was not only police corruption, political corruption, police brutality, but an actual stealing of the ballot boxes. And the people in that city, some of whom just returned from World War II, said, we're not going to be sent overseas through a military draft to fight tyranny abroad and allow it at home. And they went to the armory. They got the guns. They went to where the sheriff was hiding with some other people that were involved and had actually stolen the ballot boxes. And they said, you're going to bring the ballot boxes outside and set them on the curb, or we're going to open fire. The sheriff refused, and the people opened fire. And when they did, the sheriff surrendered, and they saved the vote, and they cleaned up at least some of the corruption, as I understand it. That is one of the only times, kind of an emblematic thing, that I can think of where the people did the right thing without misusing their firearms, but the people retaining the right to self-defense and retaining the right to correct fraud in government acted in concert effectively and did what they had to do. Nobody got killed. And that's a very interesting chapter, but the American people don't seem to be cut from that cloth anymore. Through the media, through social conditioning, psychological warfare, the public education system, it seems that that's been bred out of a lot of us. Not all of us, but a lot of us. And I talked to a friend, we're getting near the end, but I talked to a friend who helps police the border on behalf of some ranchers, the U.S. southern border, and they actually repel the people coming across the Rio Grande River and make them go back to the Mexican side. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, sends the National Guard down there largely for eye candy under Operation Lone Star. He's got many thousands of members, hundreds if not thousands of members of the Guard, the state police, but they are not repelling the people that are illegally crossing the border. And why wield all that state power with all that expense if you're not going to do the one thing that simply has to be done, and that is to repel the invasion because of the large numbers of people and say, you're not coming in.
Can I tell you something about that? Because I was in the National Guard in 2006, and I got sent down to New Mexico on the border, right?
Oh.
We did 12-hour shifts. We rolled up in there in our Humvee. There was a large canopy set up. There were several ice chests. And all we did was hand out water, Gatorade, and pre-made, like, gas station sandwiches to the illegals as they walked. That's all we were allowed to do. That was in 06. Right.
There is some speculation that the guardsmen, and I'm going to meet with one of the guardsmen soon, don't even have loaded guns. I'm not sure. I'm going to find that out. Ron, we're getting toward the end. Did you want to throw something in?
Yeah, I have
we
one
didn't
quick
have comment.
I have one more quick answer to the importance of Jay's question, why we need a gun. The why we need a gun is because the government really wants them. And if the government really wants them, they have a reason.
Right.
And I think they're scared that we still are armed. It's surprising how many people can come together quickly if they really feel a real strong threat to their community. And they're getting close to it with this COVID-19 and lockdown stuff, as we saw in Australia and other places. So we need to keep those guns and keep government scared. You have lawful government when government fears the people, and you have tyranny when people fear the government.
Jay, thanks for your very constructive and helpful call. You really put us on the spot to get us thinking this all the way through. And that's really important. We don't know it all. We got really, really smart listeners out there, and that's important that we all interact. May 10, they say they're dropping the Title 46, a public health border rule, and they're expecting tens of thousands possibly to crash the border at that time. That's just 7 days away. We'll see what happens. But Ron, thanks for helping me out today with the video. Thanks everybody for listening. Stay tuned for the next show here on RBN. Everybody have a great day. I'll see you next Wednesday on Stop the Presses. I'm Mark Hamm.
Company, we have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.